Coming up on This Week in Radio Check, our guest is Chuck Condren. I've always wanted to meet Chuck. I've heard about him for years, actually, because he wrote some software that people use with their phone systems, their Telos phone systems. But Chuck is with us. He's got some new great experiences and some terrific insights. That's coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Check is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry, at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone. Ooh, that's loud. To the light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack. I'm obviously not in the usual Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee, but I'm surrounded by Telos gear. Got the Telos shirt on, you know, just like a NASCAR driver here. I'm in Cleveland, Mississippi at one of my radio stations. Actually, in this building, there are three radio stations that are part of Delta Radio, and there's about 9 or 10 of our stations within 40 miles of right here. But that doesn't matter where I'm coming from. I'm glad that you've joined us. It's This Week in Radio Tech. It's our episode number 602 here in the summer of 2022. And I'm, as I am about so many of our episodes, I'm really excited about this particular one. Weather forecast or weather condition, it is hot, it is sunny, and I'm in Mississippi where everybody has to sweat sometime. Speaking of have to sweat sometime, it's Mr. Cool as a Cucumber. From Mukwonago, Wisconsin. Hello, 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 Kristen.
Greetings and salutations, Mr. Harnack. I keep waiting for you at the beginning of a show to go, hey, this one's going to be all right. I have nothing to write home about. We're just going to get it done.
we'll push through, kind of stick with us. You don't have to.
This one will be adequate. We are here in Mukwonago at the Dock Tower Lair. Actually, really nice out today. It's sunny, 70s, not humid like it usually is down in Mississippi in the summer. Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think the word we use up here for down there is armpit. But very nice and dry here today, Kirk.
You've changed your camera angle. I'm not seeing the floor or the balloons or the puppy dog. Yeah. Uh-oh, you're muted.
I still got to fix that. I got a new camera. It's actually kind of cool. It hangs from the top of the monitor, and you can put it down right in the center of the screen.
So you got one of those?
When I look at the screen, yeah. I spare no expense for TWRT.
Did you get yours off Kickstarter or something else?
Yeah, it was Kickstarter.
Yeah. I actually bought that camera too. And unfortunately, the way I've got my office set up, all the angles are for the camera to be up here. And so when I put the camera down here, yes, I can look right at it, but nothing in the background is in quite the right place. So I didn't think about that.
Okay. Yeah, see, with mine, I have dual monitors, and they're up fairly high off my desk. So it's on top of that, which is a tall monitor off the desk. So I'm, you know, trying to do this number to see the camera. So I decided it was time to change it up a little bit. And there we go. Now I look like a normal human being looking at the camera.
Well, you know, either camera angle is good, but I like this one. It looks like you're serious about the show. You're right here with us. Not that you weren't before, but it's a great camera.
No, I wasn't.
Camera. And I you're not now either, are you?
Why would I start now?
All right, let's go to a guy who also has a good camera, and that is our guest for today, Chuck Condren. Chuck, welcome in. It's great to see you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Chuck, I'm going to let you introduce yourself, but in just a second. But I have heard your name. Have we ever met in person? I don't know that we have.
Unless it was at an NAB in the 90s, I doubt it.
yeah. But since I've been working with Telos, the very first days of working with Telos, people would say, oh, can I use Chuck Condren's call screening software with my Telos system. And I said, I don't know the guy, but people like the software. So yeah, I guess you can. You and I may have exchanged emails literally 20 years ago over the probably. Software, but tell us.
I had the email support a few times.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha.
It was something that I originally wrote for Citadel for a really cranky, finicky prima donna talk show host in Salt Lake City. And and I basically all the features and the lack of bugs in it. I mean, there's probably some bugs, but they were all worked out because this guy, you know, well, that's great, but you need to fix this now. And so once it was perfected, after I left Citadel, I just asked them, hey, can I sell this since I put in so much work? And they said, yeah, no problem. And I just started selling it. Initially, it worked with the Hello stuff. And then I also had it working with the old Gentner 612 system. And it worked with all the Telos models all the way up to the 2101. And I eventually eventually stopped doing it. I don't know when. And sold it all over the nation. And iHeart had it as kind of an in-house one for a while.
I think that's fascinating. And there's so many more things that you've done. I'm really interested in what you're doing now. So we're going to get to that in just a few minutes. Hey, Chris and Chuck, I want to mention that our show is brought to you in part by Nautel. And they do something that's been great all during pandemic. And even if pandemic is over, winding down, I know a lot of folks still need to be careful. They're doing these Transmission Talk Tuesday roundtable discussions. Yes, they make a presentation, but it's not exactly a webinar. Because if you want to, you can participate. Jeff Welton can bring you in. You can ask questions. You can contribute if you like. And the Transmission Talk Tuesday continues through July here. They've got some shows coming up. And the next one is actually coming up Tuesday of next week. Here we're doing this show live on July 14th. They've got the next one on July 19th. That is Tuesday, July 19th. You can go register for it right now. Go to nautel.com/webinars and then click on the Transmission Talk Tuesday link and register for that. Easy to register. They'll send you an email a day before to remind you, and they'll send you an email 1 hour before to remind you. To me, that's the right amount of touch to make sure that you've remembered. The topic, the best of the worst and vice versa. The best of the worst, and maybe that would mean the worst of the best. It's going to be fun. I'm sure it will be. It's going to be just terrific. So check that out, nautel.com/webinars. We're so delighted to have Nautel sponsoring the show and letting us remind you about their terrific webinars. We got a Nautel transmitter literally 6 miles up the road from where I'm sitting that just got installed. Russell Lafferty, who's an engineer from Kentucky, installed it and did a great job, and it's on the air right now on our oldies stations. Thanks again, Nautel. All right, Chris Tarr is here, and so is Chuck Condren. Chris, I'm looking forward to an hour of hearing some real tales of daring do from Chuck. Chuck, give us the elevator speech, if you don't mind, on your prior engineering experience before moving to Memphis, Tennessee. What did you do before that?
I had worked down in Phoenix for a while as chief engineer of some famous call signs, Kool, K-O-O-L, AM-FM, and for a while at Kool TV. And then I had my own contract engineering business up in Salt Lake City, and I worked somewhat hand-in-hand with Jay Brentlinger, who eventually bought Orban for a while, and had several clients up there, 10 stations, and I think 3 ownerships. And then one of them just ended up being an iHeart station, and they sucked me into their fold, and I was with them for about 36 years. And I did regional IT for iHeart, regional IT manager on the corporate side, as well as I was director of engineering at the Salt Lake City cluster up there, and there was 11 stations at that cluster, and then I was migrated out to Memphis for iHeart as an engineering lead, and I'm currently with Starnes Media Group, who's the flagship station for the Todd Starnes Show that's syndicated across the nation.
We're going to talk about what that's like to engineer for a nationwide radio talk show. And what, by the way, one of my stations is an affiliate of the Todd Starnes show. Yeah, WNIX in Greenville, Mississippi. But you guys have affiliates all over the place. It's not just regional. You got them everywhere. And you also engineer for a station that I used to contract engineer for. I must say, I kept it running. We weren't really allowed to make any improvements, so we just kept it running. And I think you've made some improvements, so I want to get to talk about that. Let me back up a little bit, though, to your computer programming days. When you and I talked earlier about this, I thought I heard you say that when you got into writing the software to make a call screener for Telos and other on-air phone systems, did you do this without a lot of prior programming experience?
Yeah, I basically was handed a bunch of books on Object Pascal, and the compiler, the corporate engineer of Citadel, gave those to me, and I just learned it. And then eventually I went on to learn C#. iHeart, at one point, iHeart used to own Clear Channel Outdoor, which was the billboard arm, and I wrote a bunch of middleware to keep some of the digital billboards doing dynamic content. And that was all done with C# and .NET. And I had never done that. Prior to that, I had only done BASIC back in the Commodore 64 days to load a game up. I don't know how many people are aged like me that remember those days. But almost everything that I've done has been self-taught. But, you know, a lot of books and, of course, some great programmers at iHeart that held my hand along the way. But the call screening days, that was pretty much me and this corporate engineer. Somehow I made it work.
Well, and obviously you've then moved into IT, corporate IT jobs, as you mentioned, with iHeart Clear Channel, right?
Yeah. A lot of that was, a lot of the radio stations, of course they had engineers, but as stations became more reliant on computers for automation and as you see now, almost everything is computer-based in some fashion or networked. A lot of these engineers said, hey, I don't do that. I don't know how to do it. You know, I know how to go to the transmitter. I can change a tube. I climb towers. But the IT stuff, I don't know. So they drafted iHeart, and actually back in the J-Core days, drafted a lot of the radio engineers that had cross-training so that they could augment the IT department that they had at the time. Because at the time, Clear Channel's IT department was just for the billboard side. And they didn't have a whole lot. They might have had a server, you know, and some desktops, but they didn't have automation. And when they first started doing IT, automation systems were going off the air because they would roll out stuff that would, you know, take it off. Oh, we need to test that. So they got us to kind of go in there and show them how to do it from the field side. And here's what works, here's what doesn't work, and here's how you test it.
Wow. Wow. Chris Tarr, Chuck's story about that, about IT getting into broadcasting and engineers, you know, not being comfortable with IT. As a contract engineer, I knew a little tiny bit about IT. I mean, I could help people with their computers, you know, get them to print and things like that, maybe even do some networking. But yeah, in my contracting, I ran across engineers who said, "I don't do computers. No, no. But Chris, you're a computer guy as well as an RF guy. How did that come about, Chris?
I don't know. I think it just was one of those things where those were both my interests. So, and there's a lot of crossover there. At least when I first got started, that, you know, computers were getting well established. So it was pretty easy for me to dive in and do both. But yeah, there's a lot. And in fact, I've done a lot of work for engineers, kind of a trade deal where I'd help them with IT stuff. They'd help me with engineering stuff. But yeah, there's still today, you know, quite a few engineers in the field who are of the opinion of, well, I think, you know, I'm probably going to, if it gets to the point where I have to do IT stuff, you know, I may hang up the headphones at that point and move on. But yeah, I was very lucky that when I got my start, you know, there's a lot of IT stuff going on as well as RF. So from my beginning days, my position has always included both director of engineering and director of IT.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. A lot of folks like that. And then a lot of folks, you know, who leave the IT to somebody else. I think it's important. Well, let me ask Chuck. Chuck, how do you decide? Okay, this like I'm a great RF engineer, audio engineer, studio engineer, transmitter engineer. I know enough about IT to either be helpful most of the time, maybe dangerous a little bit. How do you determine that line when you know I need to call somebody else, or I'm creating a hazard here, maybe a security hazard, and I don't even know it. Obviously, I realize it enough to be able to pick up the phone and say, "Hey, we need some help over here." Do you ever help people find that line where they need to call somebody, Chuck?
Yeah, I mean, I do it, have done it. One of the things I did in the JCOR days, they had this really sharp chief technology officer, or chief information officer, a guy named Steve Gable. And the time I met him, he was 24 years old, was the smartest guy out there that I had ever encountered. And one day I called him up and he helped me through something. And he goes, I said, I'm so sorry to bother you. You're so busy. And he goes, no, never bother, because when you call me, you've at least gone through the steps that you've made an attempt to fix it. But they would rather you call them before you, like you say, before you blow it up, which, everyone's done, I'm sure, out there. So what I do, you and I talked earlier about being prepared for disasters or things that can bite you. I have a whole bunch of contacts in my cell phone that I keep. I keep notes in there and people that I can call, other contacts, other people that I've worked with. And, hey, help me with this. Even on the engineering side, when I've been off the air and sometimes it's something very simple, just an extra set of eyes or ears can help you get through the problem. So I know my limitations, but I tend to try to learn it the best I can so I don't have to ask. But I had a saying long ago, especially in corporate radio, a good dose of corporate engineering never hurts, because those guys would come in, or a corporate IT guy, and they would show you something you never even thought of. Like, oh, wow, really? So all I had to do was that, and that would have prevented this. So it's good to learn things like that.
All the cool things that I've learned, I've typically learned from somebody else showing me. Here, let me show you a much easier way to do that, Kirk. You can just... Oh, wow. Okay. Hey, we got to take a quick break. Chuck Condren is our guest. Chuck and I have almost crossed paths a few times, and now he's engineering for a nationwide radio show done out of Memphis, Tennessee, the Todd Starnes Show. And he's also engineering at a challenging AM transmitter site. We're going to get him to talk about that and regale us with a story or two. And I might be able to add some ancient history into that as well. This Week in Radio Tech, episode 602 with Chuck Condren, Chris Tarr, and yours truly. We're coming to you from several places around the country. Chuck is just up the road in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm in Cleveland, Mississippi. Chris Tarr is in Mukwonago, Wisconsin, just outside of Milwaukee. We'll be right back after this word from Broadcast Bionics.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast-critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. Effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere, and Skype TX for Radio brings high-quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI, and incoming connections are visible to users along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
The Bionic Studio from Broadcast Bionics. They're in the UK, but you can reach them anytime at bionics.co.uk or go to the other website. Oh, it's the same website, different URL, bionic.radio, bionic.radio. Check them out. They are really awesome. Love those folks and the innovation that they're doing for broadcasters. Hey, it's This Week in Radio Tech. Chris Tarr is along, and so is Chuck Condren. And so, Chuck, it's great to spend some time with you like this. I've admired your work and certainly heard good things about you. Let's talk about your move to Memphis. You went to Memphis, Tennessee, and worked with the folks at iHeart. And then like everywhere, changes are made, and you made a move, but stayed in Memphis. Tell us about that.
Yeah, after I left iHeart, I was only gone for I think 2 days, and I get a call from the owner of the station here, KWAM, and. They have a FM translator, Todd Starnes, and he said he was the owner and was looking for an engineer, wondered if I was available. And I said, by God, I am. I just became available. So, it's a great little station. They started or totally rebuilt this place. I believe it was in 2019, put in all new Telos Axia IQX consoles and a bunch of nice stuff and nice RE20 microphones and some of these Shure SM7s here. And it's a great place. Then they have a pretty old transmitter out there, which you've been to. It's an old Harris MW10B and a Harris SX1 for their nighttime transmitter. And it's a three-tower directional with the directional day and a different direction, different pattern at night. So lots of stuff, and nothing's documented out there except a couple labels. Click this.
Hey, so I know the answers to these questions, but I want to lead you through a couple questions to describe this transmitter site. We're talking about the transmitter site for KWAM, KWAM, 990 kilohertz. Obviously, they use a 10 kilowatt transmitter during the day. Are they, in fact, 10 kilowatt daytime? Is that what they are?
Yeah, daytime, and at nighttime we go down to a whopping 450 watts or so.
That's So this transmitter site is built in an interesting geographical location. It's beautiful, it's inconvenient, and it's fraught with difficulty. Tell us about the property.
Yeah, so the building is, I think, about 35 feet off the ground, with stairs that go up very steeply. And the reason it's that high, and so far it hasn't happened to me, but I'm told that in 2010, the river flooded, the Mississippi River, the mother of all rivers, flooded to the point where it actually got all the way up to that 35-foot mark and was lapping at the door. I don't know if the water went inside, but I heard stories of when they had, of course, the transmitter would quit, obviously, during those times, because the flood would last, I don't know, I think the flood water start about, what, end of March, all the way up to the first part of May, somewhere in there, traditionally. And, you know, if they have power outages, they had like a little tiny generator that they would clip onto the input leads of the 1 kilowatt out there and keep the thing on. But because the water was so high, you know, you can't drive to the base of the stairs, they would take a boat. And I've been told there's water moccasins that would try to hop into the boat. And usually you would have the engineer in the boat, not me. I don't think I'm ever going out there if this happens. But the engineer, a couple board ops, and then one of the guys would either be with an oar, or I was told with a gun, shooting these water moccasins off the edge of the boat. If you can imagine that as a broadcast engineer.
That's a great description. Let me set the stage a little bit more. Memphis, Tennessee is, you know, it butts right up to the Mississippi River in the far southwest corner of Tennessee. And at this point, on the Tennessee side, there are bluffs. In fact, there's a joke that's gone around for years. Memphis, Tennessee, the city built on a bluff and operated on the same principle. So take that as you will. At the end of Beale Street, where, you know, where all the blues and all that, that comes out, you know, quite a bit above the height of the river. You're on some bluffs. Now you can get down there. There are, you know, there's docks and stuff. But on the other side of the river, the Arkansas side, it's very flat. And that part of Arkansas is very, very flat. And so it floods quite easily. I'm sure it used to flood miles and miles in. Now they have some embankments and where the transmitter site is property that if it didn't flood, I think that property would be extremely valuable. It's a beautiful view. If you stand at the KWAM transmitter site, you have this incredible view of downtown Memphis. You have the big M-shaped bridge that goes across, takes I-40 across the Mississippi, and you've got downtown. Mm-hmm. And daytime or nighttime, it's just a spectacular view. And what's there? Water moccasins and some towers,
right? Wasps.
And wasps. So you've got several towers there. Now, I swear I remember I was there in the early 90s as their contract engineer, and I swear I remember five towers there. And I kind of remember a project that the late Bernie O'Brien, I think, did. And I want to say that they simplified something in terms of the directional pattern. I could be wrong. Maybe somebody watching or listening to this show would like to, you know, look that up. I'm sure you know where to, and say, yeah, they went from five to, they went from four to three or something. But you say now they got three towers and two different patterns. The 10 kilowatt, which is the same transmitter that I worked on from what date did you see on that on the plate?
1980 on the 10 kilowatt, and I think it's 83 or 85 on the SX1. So they're not supported, and you know, it's been fairly stable. We've had more trouble with our phaser. We've had a couple capacitors in there just decide to blow their guts all over the place. And then just recently talk about gotchas. As engineers, you're always told to check the tightness of connections from time to time on the incoming power. Well, last year I was in the hospital for a little while, and of course the transmitter went off while I was in the hospital, and we had a contractor go out there. We had lost a contactor, and they had to swap out the contactor. So I guess at some point they didn't tighten the wires all the way down, and we had two of the three phases burn up right past the contactor. So the wires were, you know, just in midair. And when we were looking at it, they were just really loose. And so, you know, you go out there from time to time to clean it and check it and take readings. And, you know, that's probably it's been in the back of my mind. Oh yeah, I ought to check those someday. Well, guess what? I didn't check those. So that's a gotcha. So a tip, always check the tightness of your connections.
Chris, I'm sure you've got some crazy transmitter sites. What do you think about our description of this place with boat access during floods?
It's crazy. It sounds really crazy. And I am I muted?
Just for a second. Oh. It went away, but it's back.
Yeah. Okay. You know, and I certainly don't want to go to the land of nope ropes, which is what you guys have, the danger noodles. We don't really have anything. We don't really have anything that crazy up here. You know, we have to, deal with maybe bears, not very often. But the snakes we have up here are pretty harmless. No, we don't, you know, I don't really have issues with water anywhere, maybe one site. You know, mostly here it's just snow. You know, when we get snow, it gets really hard to get to where we need to go.
Oh, there's one other thing I would mention. Before Chuck got there as the engineer for KWAM, there was a, back when I was the contract engineer there, and I had a full-time employee, Robert Benjamin, who worked for Harris. I'm sorry, worked for Pacific Recorders for some time out in the was it Culver City? Is that where he worked? Anyway, so Robert usually was the adventurer who went out to the KWAM site. But there was a time when there was an elderly couple who were the caretakers of the site. They lived there full time because there was a real danger of theft, of vandalism, quite easy. It just looked like an attractive target if you just wanted to go tear something up. And so having people there all the time was probably a good idea during a lot of that. But this elderly couple, and they were the sweetest people. Oh, I love them. But they loved animals a lot. In fact, they had at close to 30 dogs and cats living in the transmitter building, in the transmitter room, really. Chuck, when I was there, it was really, you know, one big room, but there was I think there was a sectioned off area, maybe in a bathroom or something. I don't know.
Yeah, there was, still is, it's not hooked up anymore, but a bathroom, but I think there was a sink in there. But I heard that there was shag carpeting at one time. Another engineer told me that he went there once after the couple had been exited from there. I don't know. You have more details on that. But the shag carpeting was moving, and you'd think, well, why would shag carpet move? And apparently there were so many bugs and things crawling under the shag, it was actually making the fibers move. And not long ago, about, I don't know, 3-4 months ago, one of the iHeart engineers, they're right next door to us, stopped by, and he kind of stood in the doorway. And I go, hey, come on in. And he wouldn't come in, almost like, you know, I'm inviting him in as the vampire, or inviting the vampire in. And he says, no, I'm good out here. And I said, oh, come on in. I'm not doing anything. I'm just sweeping up. And he goes, I don't know. There's too many bad memories. and he was recalling the story in his head. So it was bad.
It was an interesting political situation. Apparently the couple was a friend of the former owners. They weren't going to let them go. And this couple loved animals, and they thought they were doing a favor to all these dogs and cats by keeping them this way. The dogs and cats were all mangy. They were all sick. As you might imagine what the floor was like. And when we'd come out there, me and Robert, they would scurry, the couple would scurry around and clean up all the mess on the floor. So it was cleaner for me and Robert, but it was a terrible, terrible situation. Anyway, God love them. I'm glad they saved the lives of plenty of dogs and cats. It was an interesting life that they had for them. But anyway, okay. So enough about that. Chuck, you've maintained AM directionals before. Anything unusual about this site other than the elevated bases? Are the towers still elevated, just like the building
is? Those are elevated too. I think they're also right about 30 feet, then the towers up above that. It's this particular site's not documented except for, I do have some documentation of the day phaser, nothing on the night. I'm used to, I come from out west, and everything out there, at least all the places I worked, were documented that it was all fairly newer components and Intronics phasers and newer transmitters and supported transmitters. So being out here, it's a little scary for me being, just the guy that has to take care of it. So one by one, as things go wrong, I try to document it or at least figure out what happened. But it just putters along. Thank goodness I'm not out there like every day or anything. I suppose it could be worse.
We've got, Chuck, you've got some stories to tell, and good advice to give here coming up, about, IT practices, about documentation. And you've got some great advice for us about, backing up computers, even while they're on, even while files may be locked. You have a solution that you found that you like, and I want you to pass that along. Chris Tarr is with us. Chuck Condren is here. I'm Kirk Harnack, and it's This Week in Radio Tech, episode number 602. Now, I want to talk about a little audio console right now that is absolutely perfect for certain situations. You probably wouldn't want to use it as your main on-air console because, first of all, it's not stereo. It's a mono audio console, but it's from Broadcast Tools. It's the Broadcast Tools Pro Mix 4. Now, even though it's not stereo and it only has four faders or four knobs on it, four inputs, It's perfect for certain things. Let's say that you're going to run out and go do a live remote broadcast from a car dealer or a county fair or even a sports remote. This thing is perfect for that. It's simple. Yes, you can send your morning team out there. I'm not putting down morning teams, but you can send a non-technical person out there and they're going to be able to plug this thing up because it is just so easy to do and there's not that many plugs on it. You can see it's got four faders, but the first three are mic or line. They've got those connectors on the back that are, those. I think Neutrik maybe invented those, where they're either quarter-inch tip-ring sleeve or, there they are, or three-pin XLR connectors. There's also the main program out is on a three-pin male XLR on the back, as you can see there. But what this thing also has, and it's the fourth fader, it's that USB connection on the back. So yes, this thing is basically a sound card. You plug it into your computer through the USB connection, and now you can take computer audio and play it through this, or you can receive a backfeed from the radio station through it. You know, let's say you're running some kind of codec or connection service, or even Skype or a Zoom meeting on your PC. You can get that two-way audio and bring it into your headphones. Then you can also feed audio from this console, from the mix, to your PC, so that mixed audio gets to the radio station. It has just a single VU meter. It's an LED VU meter. It's not gonna break, and it's got a built-in limiter. You can engage or disengage the built-in limiter. So that's terrific. Lots and lots of features. You can see a lot of them on your screen right here, or you can go to their website and read about it too. It does have an on-air tally light relay output, and that's something you won't find on other small audio consoles, especially ones that you buy down at the music store. So this has mixed minus output too. You can hook a codec to it or a telephone hybrid, and you'll have that properly back and forth. It has full duplex talkback capability when you use the sports pods that go with the ProMix Hub 6 adapter that comes with it. Or excuse me, it's optional, but you can plug it right in there, and then you've got IFB capability. It is so cool. You can adjust your mixes on your headphones. So it's great for sports. It's great for the play-by-play, the color announcer, and announcer on the field, or maybe some field mics. The ProMix 4 from Broadcast Tools, and the place to get it, well, that's important too. Contact Broadcasters General Store. They're in Ocala, Florida. Doesn't really matter where they are. They are friendly, and they'll get your equipment to you just as fast as possible. And they have sharp pencils and good discounts. I've been buying from Broadcasters General Store for, well, literally since I lived in Memphis, Tennessee, when I was working for Sam Phillips at his radio stations. Contact them on their website at bgs.cc, bgs.cc, or call them at 352-622-7700. 352-622-7700. Love the folks at Broadcasters General Store. They really are like family at this point. All right. Chuck Condren's here. Chris Tarr is here. And Chuck, I want to hear, let's talk a bit of studio talk. You happened into the situation to do the engineering for the Todd Starnes show. And that's a nationwide show. Is it on Westwood One? Is that the
syndicator? Yeah, it's Westwood One. It's on 136 markets, and commentaries are on 700 markets, and it's broadcast through Westwood One. A couple stations take some best ofs that we feed through an FTP site. But so we do that. He does it live here from the studio of 11 to 2 p.m. Central Time. And then all the other times we do local programming here. So I'm kind of wearing two hats.
Yeah.
I know, Harry.
You're a nationwide talk show, but you also have an AM station to run. And I believe you said you had an FM translator there too, right?
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. All right. So you have you mentioned you have some AOIP gear. There's some Axia IQX audio consoles. And when you first came there, I think you contacted me with a couple of questions and I gave you some ideas how you might improve something there. What for you has been kind of maybe, I don't know, serendipitous? What have you discovered about using an AOIP system that made you think, yeah, this is pretty cool because I can do this and this and this. I couldn't do so easily with analog.
Well, yeah, it's so easy. It's an Ethernet cable. So coming back into broadcasting, at you know, from coming out of the IT world, when I left the broadcasting world to go into IT, everything was analog. You know, punch blocks and XLR connectors and phono jacks in some places. And when I got here and learned the word live wire, and I, you know, I had always heard of audio over IP, but I'd never really worked with it. So when I found out that with just one Ethernet wire and one network, you could just do anything, you know, the console and the whole concept of live wires, like a big electronic patch panel, and it's made things so much easier. And one of the things I found out by, you know, talking to you and seeing your website was that the simple, what is it called? The simple network switcher?
Oh, yeah, the simple delegation switcher.
Simple delegation switcher. So with Livewire, they have ports, just like you'd have jacks on a patch panel. Everything has a source and a destination. This little thing, and coming from a programming world, you can just real quickly edit a config file, and you can route things with just a couple buttons, which helps these board ops that really don't know what you're saying when you say, oh, go to this IP address and put this port in and all that. It simplifies it. So that was something that I learned. And this place, when I got here, yes, we had great studio equipment, but it wasn't documented. So the first thing I did was try to determine all, you know, what IPs are everything on? Is there some sort of scheme? Do they have a firewall? All that stuff I had to just kind of come in and handle, plus document the studio wiring. And I have a nice diagram on the wall that I did in Visio to, you know, the air chain flow. And the other thing they didn't have here were backups, which had bit me a few times because we've had some computer crashes that, of course, happened about an hour before the show. And, you know, to rebuild a computer from scratch, software-wise, is a good 4 hours. No backup computers and that kind of thing. So I found a really nice backup solution that I can talk about.
Yeah, and I'd like to hear Chris's opinion on this too. Before we get to that backup solution, I want to ask you about a challenge. You seem to think, Chuck, that it's not a big challenge, but your building where the studio is not far from a railroad track, an active railroad track. And it's the same railroad track that used to go by a studio where a Christian broadcaster is in Memphis, because I used to engineer for them. And in fact, years ago, the station manager was really a little teed off that the train was coming through, causing rumble and noise during one of their live productions. And he actually said, can we call the railroad and ask them not to come through during this time? Well, you know, you can. I don't know if that's going to work too well. What's Chris thinking about this?
I think he's frozen.
Chris, is Chris frozen? I don't know. Anyway, so tell us about trains being too close to studios and how it seems not a huge problem for you. I don't understand.
Well, you can look out the back window and it's the BNSF Railroad, and I think at least four times a day it goes by. Luckily, they don't honk the horns. If they honk the horns, I think we'd hear it.
Oh.
But you do feel rumble. It's almost like when it first happened, I thought we were having an earthquake because you can feel the floor wobbling. The walls aren't shaking, you know, pictures aren't dropping, but you just feel a rumble. It doesn't seem to come through on the air because they did a pretty good job of soundproofing here. And they got mic processing and stuff to deaden anything, but still. It's not that far from our back door. I think I told you earlier, it's about six car widths from the back door to the tracks. So if that thing derails someday, we're going to be doing some triage engineering here. We're all still around.
Well, and you'll be the first to know, and you'll be able to do, you know, live nationwide reports with your uplink.
We will try a live remote from the railroad crossing that's now inside the building.
Oh my God. Do you do things like on your microphones? Do you have a high pass filter involved there, or
actually in the studio where Todd Starnes broadcasts from, we're just using the built-in Telos processing that's part of the Axia, and it seems to do pretty good. And then in our production room, we have some DBX mic processors. So you know, and we'd like to augment all of that someday, but it's doing the job, and we do what we can with what we have, but it sounds good. And I think a lot of it is just due to how well this board was designed and all of the cool features that it has in it.
Let's see if Chris Tarr is back with us. Chris, you got any railroad tracks next going through your studios? Oh, he's not back. Okay. All right. Maybe he'll try to reconnect. So aside from, so you walked into a situation where they already had some Axia AOIP there. You've got the railroad tracks. Any other real challenges there, like keeping connected with Westwood One or anything like that? What's been a challenge that you've overcome there? And you did mention the lack of documentation, but we'll get to that.
Right. we connect to Westwood One with a Comrex Brick Link 2. And, you know, normally you connect, but you never quite know if it disconnects, you know, unless you're looking at the screen on the thing, and the board op and producers in there, they're busy doing things and call screening. And there's been a few times where it's disconnected. And then on Fridays, we send a best of show out to the affiliates. Well, it goes to Westwood One, and we aren't always manned when that is being fed. So there's been times when it's dropped. Now, a lot of times Westwood One would call us and say, hey, you know, you dropped. We're not getting any audio from you. We don't have a feed. And, but they don't always do that. So I thought, God, there's got to be a way to monitor this. So I contacted Comrex, and they said, well, there is a relay that closes when it's connected or disconnected. And, but it doesn't send out any emails or anything. So I got looking around on the web. Found a Broadcast Tools Sentinel G2, I think it's called, which is just a little four-channel remote that has four closures that you can manually close, or it monitors four inputs. And so I just hooked one of them up to the Telos when it is connected, and it sends us an email when it's connected and when it's disconnected. And it doesn't text automatically, but we just send it to we all have AT&T phones, so we send it to an AT&T text message link that you can program in there. And it does pretty good, and you can day part your alarm, so that's nice. It's got all kinds of configuration things on the back end, and about an hour of setup, and it works great. So it's just little tools like that we've found to help us out, because you know, more and more radio stations don't have that many staff. There it is. Yeah, it's
they're an advertiser. I asked Suncast if he would throw that up. I had not seen that before. So it's got these inputs and outputs, and certainly with the inputs, you can tell it, hey, if you get this closure, send out an email, right?
Yep. You has a place for an SMTP address. I did find a way to do an SNMP relay with Office 365, which is kind of difficult. But I thought, you know, I'm just going to do it easier. And I went to SNMP to go, I think it's called. That's a little website where, you know, for free, you get, I don't know, something like 10,000 messages. So that's pretty easy to set up. And they work with a lot of different configuration. So once I had that going, then got the email going, and it works well. And it just, it's got those Phoenix connectors on the back, and you just wire that over to the DB9 connector on the Comrex.
All right. So, let's chat about this, this backup solution. I know there's plenty of backup solutions on the market. Obviously people have found ways to backup, computers even while they're operating. But tell me what your investigation found. I always look for a way to, okay, let me back up a computer, but I, you know, they run all the time. I can't stop my automation system to, you know, back up all the files. And so I'm maybe not just very well informed on what's available. What have you found?
Yeah, I was spoiled at iHeart, where, you know, a lot of the, you know, they had primary audio servers and secondary servers. So if you really had to do some deep dive backups, you could always, you know, back up the primary, run on the secondary and that kind of thing. But here, you know, they have Symian for the local stuff, and we use OpX for the main. Did not know if any of this backup software would work. I asked some questions out on the Broadcast Engineering Forum on Facebook, and a lot of people swore by a company called Macrium Reflect, or the product's called Macrium Reflect. The company is Macrium, and it's not very expensive. They have all kinds of different packages, and we just simply bought what they call the workstation package. I think it's $75 a workstation that comes with 1 year support. You don't have to have support. So once after that year is up, the software still works. And you can back up a full, I think our OpX server, and we have a air check machine. Both of those have some pretty big hard drives, about a terabyte. They're, I'd say, three quarters full, somewhere in there. It'll back it up, a full backup from scratch, in about 35 minutes. And then if you have to do a restore, I haven't restored the server side, but on a PC, I've done a restore from a full backup or like an incremental in a matter of like 3 or 4 minutes. It's very quick, and it does it with file locking technology. So it's watching to see what files are in use. It kind of monitors that. And then if it's in use, it just goes back and grabs that file and backs it up when it can.
I was looking at the website here. It's an odd name, Macrium Software, and it's the website is, we'll put this in the show notes, Macrium, Macrium.com. And so they have software, you know, computer backup solutions. How do you, let's say you had a computer that had a wacky hard drive or an SSD with too many bad sections. And anyway, you get your computer back hardware-wise working, and you think, okay, I'm ready to reinstall this. I take it you can just put it back on there without having to go through the normal, like, Windows reinstall procedure. Is that right?
Not quite. Now, if the computer's still running and you have maybe someone deleted a whole directory, you can browse an image just like you can browse something on your computer. You just go to it. It maps a drive. Go to the server, and then you can over the wire replace whatever got deleted. But a full backup, if something crashed, there's a little USB thumb drive that you would have to take, has Windows PE on it. Takes about a minute to boot up, and then you can either take your I do everything to a USB drive here, and you can just carry that to the machine or bring the machine back where this drive is, or, you know, it's all networkable. So you can have a full blown server and just, do some commands on a DOS prompt and map a drive, and then go out and see your backup. So you don't really have to, you know, have this drive with you. It's just a little bit easier. We're real small here, just a few, offices. They do sell some server software that does allow that kind of stuff for enterprise usage for big corporations, and it's of course more money. And there's ways that they have where you can do full blown offsite restores and backups. This just runs on a Windows service, just on a little PC that you can schedule your backups however you see fit. I use the traditional grandfather, father, son, backup rotation scheme. You can have it do it once a month, whatever you want. It takes care of deleting older backups. And they're just files. So you can take this USB drive and then send that off to like a OneDrive somewhere, or make a copy of it and do an offsite backup. So it's pretty reasonable, especially with radio stations that are on a budget like we are. It's 75 bucks a computer. It's a great deal.
Well, there's a few other topics that we can try to hit before we run out of time. By the way, Chuck, of course, as is my tradition, I forgot to mention to you that after our last spot break, we try to do a tip of the week. I don't know for sure that Chris Tarr is going to be back. His day job was calling, and so that's why he hasn't been on for a few minutes. So he's going to try to get back on. But after the last spot break, we try to do a tip of the week. So maybe you can think of something during the next spot break for a tip of the week. But we were going to talk about silence sensing. And that's, you know, these days, I swear, we here in the Mississippi Delta, we've got about 9 or 10 radio stations. And on the one hand, we're always listening to them. On the other hand, it seems like nobody's listening to them in terms of telling us, hey, we've had dead air since 4:30 this morning. could you let us know? What have you found as a solution for monitoring your stations, even when nobody on staff is?
So we have there's a free piece of software out there. It's Pira, if I'm saying it right, P-I-R-A. Mm-hmm. I forget where you get it. If you just Google that, Pira Silent Sense.
I happen to know it's a Pira.cz, as in Charlie Zebra. Because it's a Czechoslovakian, it's a Czech company, Czech Republic, and they make a number of cool things. At my stations here, we're on a budget like you. We use their RDS encoders, and it's a little bit of a hill to climb to get to learn how to use them, because there's some PC software and the RDS encoder, but their RDS encoders are like under $300. They're cheap.
Oh, wow.
Not me. I'm not smart enough, but Larry Fuss, my business partner here, he's got them singing and dancing and you know, doing all kinds of nice stuff and tied into the automation. So Pira makes a number of different things, and the silent sensing software, which is just a little Windows program, is absolutely free. But I'm sorry, please go ahead with how you're implementing that. Yeah,
well, we have it on our air, runs on our air check machine. So it's monitoring the stream that we send out. We stream our station, and it also monitors what's coming out of the console. So we get a silent sense on both items, and you can set it for a real quick response. I think ours is set at 2 minutes. And again, you can have it email you or set up a text URL in it, and it's very handy. And then we remote control into the station many times to just rescue whatever it is. Usually we just have a commercial that was the wrong length, or many times it's one of our network's feeds from, you know, some other show where they have an issue and there's not a whole lot we can do. You know, they missed a break or whatever, but at least we know about it. We have a similar thing. It's I think it's a broadcast tools box out of the transmitter that if it's off for 5 minutes, we have it set to, and that calls me on the telephone. So
gotcha.
Those are things that we're doing.
Gotcha. All right. Anything else we want? Well, we have talked about most of the things that we wanted to talk about. Tell you what, we're going to see if Chris is able to get back in. He always has a good tip of the week for us. And during this commercial break, Chuck, maybe you can think of your own tip of the week, something you can leave our engineers with, leave our audience with, is something they can take home and use. In the meantime, This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by my friends over at Angry Audio. Don't get mad, get angry. Angry Audio took over the business of Studio Hub. You may have heard that Studio Hub went out of business, closed their doors. Well, gee, goodness gracious, like three and a half years ago or so, Mike Dosh said, you know what, I'm not going to let that happen. We're going to keep those going and make sure that the super high quality adapter cables from Studio Hub are still available. And so they bought the company, they bought the jigs, they bought all the technologies, the intellectual property, and I've still, as far as I know, still have the same people making these. And this is one of the things that Studio Hub figured out how to do. They figured out how to take high quality audio cable, shielded twisted pair cable, and actually get those wires into an RJ45 connector right here. And, you know, this is so popular, this style of connector used for analog or AES-EBU digital audio, very popular among the audio over IP manufacturers like Axia, like Wheatstone, and others. And this is just a great way to make fast connections. But it's not great to try to crimp your own stranded wire into an RJ45 connector. And that's what Studio Hub figured out how to do very, very well. You're familiar, I'm sure, with the look of these various adapters. You know, an adapter like this goes close to the piece of equipment that you want to hook up. And then it's a short cable, but then you just hook any length of Cat 5 cable that you need to this. Here's a very short, you know, 1 foot piece of Cat 5 cable, but you know, you can run this as far as you need to. It's balanced, twisted pair audio, so it's very robust. I've not had them pick up hum at all. I just think these things are terrific. They also, as I said, make them for, you could use them for analog audio, balanced analog stereo audio, mono audio, or AES EBU digital audio. They all work great. Now, in addition to the cables, and the cables are great on their own, there's a whole range of accessories and gizmos and gadgets, as they call them. I just talked to an engineer a couple weeks ago about the distribution amp that Angry Audio makes, and he was singing its praises. It's the best distribution amp he's ever used. He says the audio quality is stunning. It's absolutely stunning. A lot of times distribution amps are designed not to sound good, but also to be cheap to manufacture or to fit in a 19-inch rack panel or whatever the criteria may be. But he told me I'm going to buy more of these whenever I need to distribute analog audio, which is not as often anymore. But he said, oh, I love these things. So if you go to the website, angryaudio.com, check out, and their latest thing, the headphone disconnector. That's pretty cool. They have all kinds of products there that are just amazing. I've been in plenty of studios that have beautiful, huge Axia Quasar console, and underneath there's a couple of items from Angry Audio to make the headphones work better, so people can plug in their laptops and USB and all that kind of stuff. Really good stuff. Thanks a lot, Angry Audio, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. Our show is also brought to you by Max Connect Wireless. Here's Gary Morrill to tell you more.
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
Hey, my Max Connect is just out of reach right now, so I can't show it to you. But where I am here at this studio in Cleveland, Mississippi, this place was hit by a tornado, literally. I think it was about 2 years ago. And yeah, our internet was down for a while. In fact, the power station, the power plant across the road was out for a while. We used Max Connect right here at this facility to restore internet connectivity to us so we could, upload newscasts to American Samoa and download shows here. Max Connect Wireless, great stuff. Check them out. No matter which U.S. carrier you like, you can have your choice there of AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, and Sprint, and it's awesome. Give Josh Bone a call. And hey, just to circle back real quick, I just got a note from Tim Braddock. Hey, Tim, glad you're listening and watching about Studio Hub. Tim says, we moved 7 stations into a new facility, all Studio Hub wiring, quick and easy. Thank you. Well, thank you, Tim. Appreciate that. Actually, I added thank you both ways. All right, it is the end of the show, and we're going to see, put Chuck on the spot here, Chuck Condren, if he can come up with a tip of the week for us. Chuck, what should we know?
I would say that my best tip is to document everything you can and keep it up to date, keep it handy. I'm always updating our IP list of things that we have to connect to here, and the reason I say stay up to date, because you know, when you get called in the middle of the night on a weekend, you don't want to have to be scrambling and trying to remember how that was hooked up or how you get it back on the air. Keep it fresh. However you take notes. I have a lot of stuff in contacts, in Dropbox. That's my best bet. Keep your connected items, the way you look things up, whether it's a computer, your phone, your brain, and document your plant the best you can. And that's the best way I think you can get on the air quicker in an emergency.
Is there a computer program or a functionality that you'd like to use to quickly discover all your IP addresses, that gives you as much information as it can automatically?
I use either Advanced IP Scanner or Angry IP Scanner. Virus software thinks one of the two. I think it's the Advanced IP Scanner. They think it's a virus. It's not. It's safe. But I do that internally. And then Telos has their IP probe, which is nice for your Axia network, where it can go and discover your IPs and show you what's on there. So those two things help me, and I run them occasionally. And it'll check your both of those scanners will check your wireless IPs too, because you never know who's got something running on the wireless network that may be interfering with something in your building. Somebody's got a computer with malware, you know, that they brought in their home computer. You can go find it and go, hey, there's my source of my slow internet.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting topic. In fact, tell you what, I'll dovetail on what you just said. I know that some people still don't have really high-speed internet available at their studio. One of our stations over in Indianola, Mississippi is still, the best we can get is DSL. It is slow. It's challenging. We constantly stream out of there, but sometimes the stream gets a little choppy because it's just terrible, the speeds that we get. And so one time back in American Samoa, our station's there, I got a call from somebody who said, hey, our internet speed just went way down. Can you see if there's something wrong before we call? And so I remoted into the router. I had to do an IP scan, and I did more than that. This is a Microtech router, and I know how to use the Torch facility to see what IP addresses are using how much bandwidth. And I found one, and that's interesting. And I looked at the MAC address, and I did a search on the MAC address. Turned out it was an iPhone. An iPhone was doing a big old update to its iOS operating system. And the person with that iPhone who was complaining about the slow internet speed was the person who had just brought that iPhone onto the island, and it's decided to start doing an update right then. So anyway, yeah. So, well, you know that phone that you brought in the building? Yeah, that's the problem. Yep. It's great to learn how to use these tools. And you know, Chuck, I would add to that. Try to use these tools when things are operating normally, so you get a baseline idea of what is normal. What's your normal up download speed and normal ping times, and how many things are on your network normally? At my house, if I do an IP scan, I got like 55 things on my network. Cameras and thermostats and everything.
Yep. You know, it can be just something simple. At iHeart, we had a problem with Symantec antivirus going out and getting its updates, and it was getting stuck, and it was a bug that Symantec fixed for us. But that brought down almost the whole radio network and outdoor network for a few hours before we figured out what it was. So again, you know, here's our normal bandwidth that, like you say, check that and what's running. And that's one thing I do is, when we do have problems, I go to that person's computer or computers and what changed. So, you know, if you can check what should be on the computers, and if you can standardize what some companies control, what can even be installed. We're not that fancy here, but get to know your computer build so that you can easily see, oh, wait, what's this? And there's all kinds of ways of finding malware without using malware bytes or those kind of things. And that's a whole nother topic.
Chuck, I appreciate so much you sharing your knowledge and wisdom with us today. It's been great to have you on. I do appreciate you.
My pleasure. I hope it was beneficial.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Love to have you on again sometime, and hope to see you at some conference or convention or something. Chuck Condren has been our guest. He's the chief engineer over at KWAM, KWAM. In Memphis, Tennessee, and for the Todd Starnes Show. Chris Tarr was here for the first half of the show. He had to bail. He had something come up at work, and so I'm glad it all worked out, though. And we'll get two tips of the week next week from Chris Tarr. Thanks to our sponsors for making this show possible. I really wish that you would let them know that you hear about them here and that you'd even consider buying their products. It really helps out. Also, thanks a lot to Suncast, always on top of things and making the show look great. Thank you, Suncast. And thanks to Andrew Zeri, the founder of the GFQ Network. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.